Okay. Well, thanks for having me here today. This is exciting to be at APHA, especially as a social worker. There's so many intersections in social work and public health. So I'm going to be talking today about social connectedness and self-efficacy and how these may be associated or serve as protective factors in adverse mental health outcomes that are commonly experienced by homeless youth. And it seems like we collect these data about things like social connectedness and self-efficacy, and then we do very little with them. So I was curious in running these analyses to see if there was any comparative difference. Is one more of a protective factor than the other, or neither? Is it the same difference? Because we're all, I think, as service providers and researchers working with this population, feeling very crunched for time and resources and money to roll out every possible program that we want. So if we could maybe look at how these different common intervention constructs are potentially more or less effective with buffering youth from these adverse outcomes, then that's probably worth exploring. So that's sort of the context for what I'm talking about. I have no relationships to disclose. I think we're required to put this in the presentation. But as many of you know, if you're interested in working with homeless youth, often their lives are framed in research and in narratives about them as being very problem-focused in nature. Yes, they have generally experienced a host of adverse life experiences. Certainly physical and sexual abuse are way higher than their housed peers. Experiences of street victimization, suicide ideation, many of these experiences happening prior to leaving home as well as after becoming homeless. Yet it's a population that, as many of you probably know from working with them, identifies or exudes a lot of potential for resilience and for positive healing through intervention work in particular. So the two mental health outcomes I'm looking at today are depression and substance use disorder, both of which are far higher in homeless youth compared to their housed counterparts. And the co-occurrence of the two, depression and substance use, is when they're in combination, exposes this population to even more street victimization, more adverse health outcomes and experiences. So they're very important things for us to be looking at as researchers and service providers for how to reduce. So first, some definitions. Social connectedness is defined in the literature as a core intervention construct. It kind of came out of counseling psychology. It's perceived social support or a sense of belongingness. The aims of social connectedness are generally to foster peer affiliation, to improve adolescent self-esteem, to facilitate friendship, and to reduce stress. It's not about focusing on perceived deficits within themselves as individuals. It's more about kind of the positive youth development model of identifying assets and resources that are present within themselves as well as within their surrounding environments. And it's been shown, although it's pretty limited in homeless youth research, but it has been shown as a protective factor in the amelioration of health risks, particularly in homeless youth who have experienced sexual and physical victimization in the past. Dr. Rue's work out of University of Texas. Self-efficacy, on the other hand, is not about the surrounding environment. It's more about individuals' perceptions of the ease or difficulty associated with performing a task or subscribing to a particular behavior unto themselves. So it's not about the within the broader social network. It has been shown as sort of a rule-following behavior or their a person's ability to modify their intentions toward healthier choices and outcomes. And this has also received limited research within homeless youth, but it has been a compelling predictor of homeless youth service-seeking intentions and the only predictor of their rule-following behavior within shelter-based milieu in some prior research. So the current study, as I said earlier, is among homeless youth, what are the relative comparative effects of these two different core intervention constructs and their associations with depression, substance use disorder, and the co-occurrence of both depression and substance use disorders. So our study, we looked at 601 homeless youth who were recruited from shelters and agencies across three different sites, Denver, Austin, Texas, and Los Angeles. They had to be 18 to 24 years in age in order to participate in the study, and that was really a function of the service providers that we worked with, the shelters and service providers. Those were the kind of the target ages that those particular shelters worked with. They had to have spent at least 2 weeks away from home in the month before the interview, and they had to provide written informed consent. And researchers administered about a 45-minute quantitative retrospective interview that was read aloud to participants, and they gave verbal responses to the questions. And then they were given a $10 gift card incentive for their participation. And this might be small. Demographically, there were some differences by site in things like race, ethnicity. I think Austin youth had experienced more homelessness than their peers in Denver and Los Angeles, respectively. In terms of the sample, about a third of the sample met diagnostic criteria for depression, two-thirds of the sample met criteria for substance use, and about a quarter of the sample met qualifications for both, criteria for both. There were also slight differences by site in terms of age, transience, the length of time homeless, and things like that, but pretty well balanced in terms of number. There were about 200 youth in each site. So measures for the outcome variables of interest. The depression and substance use disorder were measured using the MINI, International Neuropsychiatry Interview. It's basically, for those of you who haven't seen it, it's more like a decision tree sort of outcome where a series of questions are asked and then it results in a yes-no kind of criteria, whether or not you meet diagnostic criteria for major depressive disorder and substance use disorder, respectively. For measuring social connectedness, we used a validated psychometric instrument called the Social Connectedness Scale. That's Lee and Robbins who developed that in the mid-90s. And among our current sample, the internal consistency reliability was very strong at 0.9. Usually, as a rule of thumb, people like to see that about 0.7 or so is sort of how the items, as they call it, hang together among different samples. Self-efficacy, we didn't quite make that 0.7 rule of thumb. In our sample, it was 0.63, but we used the self-efficacy subscale items from the client evaluation of self and treatment. It's often just called the CEST scale. And then we also put in as control variables homelessness experiences that are commonly looked at in homelessness research, such as how long people had been homeless, how much transience, measured by number of intercity moves that youth had indicated, and then their primary living arrangement, whether it was in a shelter or couch surfing, temporarily housed with relatives, things like that. So in the current analyses, we looked at hierarchical logistic regressions, so basically putting different blocks of these things. First, those socio-demographic variables in the first block, the second block being those homelessness experience variables that I mentioned, and then in the third block, participant scores on the social connectedness and self-efficacy scales. And when I show you the results, I have them split off into three different versions or iterations of those models. In one model, I put in social connectedness only. In one, I put self-efficacy only. And then in the other version, I put both self-efficacy and social connectedness, just so we could see different comparisons and to tell if one or the other was washing the other construct out. We could kind of see them independently. And then we did a Bonferroni adjustment because we were looking at three different outcomes: depression, substance use, and the co-occurrence of the two of those. So for multiple comparisons, that's three different models. We actually did a more conservative p-value adjustment to account for that we were looking at lots of different things kind of simultaneously. So 0.05 divided by 3. To reach significance, it had to be 0.02 instead of 0.05, so a little more stringent. So the results on depression is the first outcome. The main punchline is both social connectedness and self-efficacy were protective factors against depression in all of the models. In the social connectedness only model, in the self-efficacy only model, and when they were both in the model at the same time. Austin youth were more likely than Denver youth as a control to meet criteria for depression. And I think that was basically the only control variable that appeared significant in that. But our both constructs, intervention constructs, were considered potential significant buffers against depression. But then looking at substance use disorder, social connectedness again was significant anytime it appeared in any of the models, but self-efficacy was not. It was not a protective factor against substance use disorder when it was in the model by itself or when it was in the model with social connectedness. Here, transience was a predictive control variable. The more transient youth were, the more likely they were to engage in substance use, which I think we could generally agree with from just anecdotal experiences. And then gender, males were more likely in each of these models to meet substance use disorder criteria compared to females. And then Los Angeles youth were more likely than the Denver control group to also meet criteria for substance use disorder. And then looking at co-occurring depression and substance use disorder, social connectedness, again, wherever it appeared, was a protective factor against the co-occurrence of these. Self-efficacy was, again, it was protective against depression or co-occurring depression and substance use disorder when it was in the model by itself, but then when it was both intervention constructs, connectedness and self-efficacy moved out of being significant. So, looking through, there are not really other variables of significance or interest in any of these models in terms of the controls or homelessness variables. So basically the punchline to that, social connectedness significantly buffered against all three mental health outcomes whenever it was in any of the models, but self-efficacy was certainly important throughout most of the models, but not significant in all of them. And that's kind of interesting that it wasn't, self-efficacy wasn't significant in buffering against substance use disorder, because part of the intent for why that CEST measure was developed in the first place was for a substance use intervention. There are certainly some limitations because questions were very positively worded in terms of the social connectedness. It was assuming that social connectedness is always a good thing, that it's to pro-social adults and pro-social peers and things like that, whereas we know from Amanda's work and other work that a lot of times risk, the more socially connected some people are, the more likely they are to engage in substance use because that's what's happening and that becomes kind of the norm of the group. So it's all kind of in how it's measured, and it's not to say that self-efficacy can't create one's ability to become more socially connected. I mean, maybe you need to feel self-efficacious in order to even join a group or to identify other people as being connected to, and vice versa. So we don't know much about the causal order, but it is interesting that a lot of case management approaches and a lot of counseling and things like that are very individually held, whereas maybe there are some potentials for us to be doing more intervention work that focuses on groups and activities and skill building. And anecdotally, I've been working with this photo voice opportunity or group with homeless youth where we're giving homeless youth cameras, and we're identifying different themes that they want to maybe go out and photograph in their community and try to create some social change around it. And resoundingly, the youth, I thought they might be more interested in just getting the camera and, you know, that was cool and artistic, but they keep coming back to the group saying, that's fun and all, but it's really just that there's something to do. It's actually preventing me from, you know, going and getting high or feeling down. I have something to look forward to. This is kind of the highlight of my week. We need more activities like this. So not necessarily social connectedness in the kind of group, you know, substance use kind of group model where we sit around and talk about substance use, but we just have something to do that we feel like we're part of something. So that was kind of a light bulb for me that it's like, oh, that maybe it's that version of social connectedness that we need to be focusing more on in our interventions and our work in shelters and in service provision types of scenarios of all kinds, that there's just something to be a part of, that it doesn't have to be that clinically focused even, it's just something, an alternative. So I already kind of talked about limitations. It's cross-sectional. We don't know the causal order. This is definitely not to say that self-efficacy isn't important, because they're very, even though they're different constructs, they're probably highly related to each other in their own right. But it's something to think about. And then, of course, we were reading questions to the youth, so they may have given us a lessened version of their depressive and substance use symptoms and things because of social desirability. But we do need a lot more intervention work done with homeless youth. It's massively missing from literature. There are very few actual evidence-based interventions that are written about with homeless youth, as many of us probably know. So this is maybe a place to start thinking about how we can develop and test things that are a little more culturally relevant and potentially more effective with this population. That's it.